Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to this edition of the John Papaloni Show. Today, we have special guest Alexey Sapochnikov. I think I got it. Yeah. Alexey, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Let's start off the show with a description of who you are, what you do, and how you got here.
Okay. So basically, I'm a serial entrepreneur, Israeli serial entrepreneur, mostly concentrated on deep tech, like, cyber, AI, compliance, data, everything that is related to enterprise-grade IT. And until now, raised over $35 million for my two previous companies. Actually, both exited, sold. Both ended up as a full-blown cybersecurity solutions. And today, actually, we are running a new company in a very exciting new domain of organizational intelligence. So that's where we are.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. So yeah, so you've been around the block. You've done this a few times.
a little bit.
Yeah, like now, how did you come up with all this, right? Like, I mean, obviously, technology is your strong point. Technology is where, you know, where your interest is. How did that develop? Like, is that something you've always been interested in, or is that something that happened as you got older?
Wow, that's an amazing question. I started my journey actually as an employee, as a techie employee, and for many, many years when I was younger than today. I was in executive technological positions, in Israel and out of Israel. I actually worked for SAP Labs, the big German giant, and was the VP, development manager there, and was the deputy CTO for MindCTI and additional NASDAQ trade companies. And slowly I realized that what I love to do is actually to create some important technological products that are in use by enterprise people, enterprise employees. And that's what I love to do. And also I love to to be in forefront of technology and to create something that solves, a long year's pain for various business units. And, natively, I jumped to entrepreneur's water. It happens already like some time ago. And from then, deal after deal, the venture after venture, that's what we're doing.
Interesting. Cybersecurity is such a unique thing, right? Because let's be honest, it's something you don't think of, right? Most of the stuff we use today, especially online through the cloud, has some form of security in there, but people don't think about that, right? It's not like you wake up and say, oh, is this secure? You just sort of go and use it. But there's so many things going on in the background, and it's I find it fascinating, right? Because I don't know, I look at data to me, and this is maybe because I don't keep very many things digitally, but I look at it and I'm thinking, why is this so important? Like, why would an individual user be worried about cybersecurity?
So first of all, you're right. If I would describe like a progress of the usual technology, which is not the cyber technology, so every progress of our regular technologies that we or our companies are using should be protected. And that means that every new step of development of the regular technology requires protection from all the angles and points of view in the domain of cyber. Now, sometimes some tools became outdated, and some tools became very complex with the time. So cybersecurity is kind of infinite space where there's always a room for advancing and actually closing the gaps. And unfortunately, it's like always a room also for the bad guys, not just for the good guys, but also for the bad guys, you know, to invent some new ways of attacking us, stealing our things, identities, and so on. So that's the kind of cybersecurity.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And how is artificial intelligence affecting everything? Because clearly with robots doing a lot of things, I'm sure the landscape changes. Yeah.
So that's an amazing question. You know, I would say that artificial intelligence today is actually influencing every piece of our, you know, regular life and every piece of technological life. And definitely, it have super big influence on both spaces, like cyber and compliance. So it's like, it's tremendous space. So first of all, if we are talking about, you know, bad actors and, you know, and bad guys, they suddenly can do more with artificial intelligence. They can, like, learn much more faster from the data they have, you know, how to intrude the organizations. They can invent things, you know, that are much more adaptable to the environment they succeeded to arrive. So for the perspective of bad guys, this is also a very, very problematic. However, for the protection side, for the side of defense, this is something that make many processes much more shortened than it was, much more efficient, and actually permit to the information security officers to arrive to the, you know, to the really important thing that they need to address with much, you know, shortened period of time. Like what we call MTTR, mitigation time to respond, is actually like reducing very much, and that's wonderful, you know, because of the artificial intelligence.
Yeah, because let's be honest, robots can work faster than humans can, whether we like that or not. And yeah, so now the thing I found fascinating about artificial intelligence is the fact that everyone thinks this is new. And reality is AI has been around for many, many years. And we just don't always know that we've been, you know, interacting with it. Like when people go online and they do the chatbots, they actually think there's somebody on the other side sitting there reading and replying. When reality is, you've been talking to robots all these years. It's like, just didn't know you were, right? So it's fascinating. So not everyone thinks it's new and revolutionary. And there's a myth out there that it's going to take everyone's jobs. Now, do I believe some jobs are at risk? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I also believe there's going to be some new jobs as a result of this as well. So certain industries are going to be at risk, where certain industries are going to benefit. What industries or what positions out there do you think are at risk as a result of AI?
So first of all, this is really something that I agree very much with what you say. You know, ChatGPT and all this new wave and new hype of ChatGPT was called iPhone moment or wow moment for big mass of the people. However, for us, for people who deal with AI for several years, it wasn't, because like we understood very much what is in the LU, what are the transformer models, the foundational models, all those stuff. And you know, I agree with you, like unavoidably part of the jobs will be eliminated, but this is a good news because I think that it means that people can actually be more creative, and they will be pushed to go to the next level. And in this next level, you know, if they want it or not, they will be forced to be much more creative, do things in bigger volume with, you know, with bigger responsibility, which is kind of the good thing. That's what I think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So bottom line is I think that the bare minimum wage jobs are going to be where that's risk, where the upper echelons, where you have more opportunity, those are going to be more in demand.
Yes, yes. I think that eventually, like, let's take, for example, the software engineering. Okay.
Yes.
So software engineering, I believe, will become more like software architecture. Like, people will spend significantly less time for burning out, trying to do some small things, and really, putting their efforts to create some big vision and to create the product or the feature, out of the blocks that will be prepared by artificial intelligence, and people will check those blocks and adapt those blocks, which is a good thing. Because who said that the right thing is to deal with the small bits and bytes and burn your efforts and your creativity there? Maybe it's a time to go a level up. So I definitely look on it like something good that's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's some people out there that think AI is dangerous and that it's going to take over humans and put them at risk.
Yeah.
Do you believe that, or do you believe that it's just people's fears?
No, it can be dangerous. Exactly like if I will take this phone and will drop it on someone's head, also this phone will be dangerous. The question is, how we are using AI. And what are the rules for using AI, and what should be, in AI responsibility, and what should be not? We have a vast spectrum of domains, which, very important portion of decision is a human emotional, part. In this spectrum of domain, I believe that AI should be controlled, should be, used as something that helps, but not something that decides. However, we have a lot of, domains when the things should be automated and the things are not requiring any, emotional or sensitive, part, like some, recurrent task or something that is really based on only data. Which by far can be done by AI. So that's the point. Now, if we are talking about things like ethical AI or AI regulation compliance, which is going these days in Europe, and by the way, part of the things our new company is doing, we have a product for cyber, we have a product for compliance, and as a part of our product of compliance, we also are providing these features like, to keep your compliance to keep your AI models regulated and all this stuff. However, what I think is that this is a very good development, and it's helped to keep AI under control, and also forcing people and organizations who are using AI to understand what they are doing with the AI, what can be the results and the implication, which is very important.
For sure. Now, you're opened up two things that you sold or exited, and now you have a third company that's on its way.
Yeah.
What would you say was your biggest challenge, building each of these companies? Because there's usually a common denominator that kind of interacts with every startup.
So I would say that every step in company development actually have its own, challenges and its own problems that should be solved. Now, I'm very agree with Mr. Andreessen for Andreessen Horowitz, who said that startup is actually a bunch of risks. You have the risk of the product, you have the risk of the sales, you have the risk of the market and all the stuff. And once you are doing, your way, your journey with your startup, you are basically de-risking it. Now, if you are building the startup who is VC backed, and this startup is actually raising rounds one after other. So the reason for raising the next round is actually de-risking several things from this, you know, bunch of risks that, that were initially. If you are doing a bootstrap profitable company startup, which today is a huge opportunity for many people to do it, and many are doing it, so there natively, you know, because you are living out of the revenues, so in this way, you must de-risk various things, you know, with your journey. For example, product market fit, what should be changed in your product, you know, to fit it more for the customers. What is your ICP, like ideal customer person? What are the goal market strategy that works and, you know, not too expensive, and it can be done, you know, as a portion of your profit? All those questions are, you know, the challenge that should be solved.
Was there ever a moment in time where you felt there was like a risk that you weren't going to make it?
All the time.
so yeah.
every day in every company, you know, you know this guy that sells jets, Steve Versano.
Yeah.
You know, with his TikTok, he's amazing, and you know, I'm watching his videos, and he said, like, you know what, nothing will work as planned. That's exactly the situation. So nothing is working planned, and it's always, you know, when you will go to the fight, so it's always be something that you are not prepared, which is normal, and be prepared to it.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason I ask that question is because there's a lot of people out there that think that they're only ones that go through the struggle. They wonder how people do it. And I just want to illustrate it, that anybody that is trying to create something great is going to, you know, have doubt sometimes, and they wonder why they're still doing it, right? It's a universal thing. It's not an individual thing.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously you're doing it for the purpose, because you want to have a, you know, like, you're trying to create some good, and that's the purpose, and that's what keeps people going. You get into a lot of venture-backed businesses.
Yeah.
Raising money.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, when interest rates, I'll give you an example. When interest rates were 2.4%,
mm-hmm.
everybody had money to throw around.
Yes.
That one is sort of, you can just say, I need money, open your eyes, and the money lands in your lap. But now things are a little bit different. You always have, like, there's always people out there. There's some people where interest rates doesn't matter. It doesn't affect them. But there's some people that it does. Obviously, I think things have changed a bit where there are more challenges. So what is your process of raising money? And have you noticed a difference, you know, with raising money when the interest rates were low versus today?
So today, let's put it this way. We as a company, we are not in process of raising money, since we are profitable, you know, startup company, and we decided, you know, this time until now, at least, you know, to do it without VC money. However, I'm definitely, I have a large network, you know, with VC partners and investors in Israel and in Europe and in the States, and many of my friends are in various, you know, stages of raising money. I also was for 8 years, I was the part of a global entrepreneurs organization. We spoke about it a lot. And, you know, so I see it from all different perspectives, from the VCs that sometimes ask me for intros, you know, for bringing them startups, or asking me myself about my opinion about their technology or something like that, and from the guys that are looking for money. I think that actually today is a better moment to raise money than it was in 21, and let me explain why. You know, you want to arrive to this moment when you are raising money with something real. Because I think there is useless to raise money and to discover that you cannot build it, cannot sell it, you need, you know, to regroup, you need to find something. I think if the initial barrier requires you to make more de-risking, to make more research, to make, you know, more homework, to make like more things that you should show to your pre-seed investors or seed investors, I think this is a good thing because it serves you. It's not serving your investors. Or it serves you. It serves that you are ready that the day after you raise money, you will be in good position. You will be in the position that that you will have customers, that you will have this product done, that you can go and, you know, and really do it well. However, you're right. When you are talking about the yield and the, you know, and the interest rates and in the market, that's definitely something that you know, that influence the whole model of venture capital. You know, LPs that are investing in venture capital. However, I think that, you know, based on what I see now, that, you know, NASDAQ is high. And I think that the investor have the investor actually have a lot of dry powder, you know, to put and to deploy, to capital to deploy. And I think actually today it's a pretty much good moment for raising the money. That's my impression.
Absolutely. I believe before people were holding back because out of fear. When there's massive changes in the market, people get scared and a lot of people sit on the sidelines and wait. We've had some stability in the last few months, and I think that stability has given people confidence again. So what I want to touch upon is what you were saying in terms of the raising capital and being more, yeah, what you were talking about is due diligence, and you're right. A lot of people were skipping due diligence because money was flying everywhere. That's and true. You know what? I grew up in an era, and I think you grew up in the same era, where people celebrated profits and having a good idea that proves to be right, a good idea that actually helps people. Where when money was flying everywhere, people were celebrating that they got debt and they got venture capital and they got raised money. Like, they didn't care whether they made money or not. Raising money was more important and more celebrated than the profits. And I thought that was the silliest thing I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah. You raise money, but now you got to produce. You know what I mean? And people forget that.
That's exactly the point. You know, if we will, let's take, you know, the something from the years, and you and me will be, you know, in the beginning of our careers. Let's take the Enron case. So as you remember, the Enron case started, you know, to be like a snowball after a simple question of how you are doing money. Where is the unit economics which is profitable? So I think the same question when you are coming, you know, to all this era of, you know, money which is flying, that's the same question. Are you a sustainable business? So let's say you are raising money now. Can you build a business which, you know, if you are removing everything, you know, except your costs and things like that, that you can put a, I don't know, 50 cents and receive $2, okay, something like that. So that's a very simple question, which is not so simple to solve. And when we are seeing, you know, those, you know, large rounds, or we see a lot of, you know, large claiming of large IRRs. So the question is if it's sustainable or not after all. So that's a question about due diligence.
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings up another point, and I'm a little bit biased here, is that because people have several rounds of investments. Now, I believe that those rounds have to be justified. And what I mean by that is I believe that extra rounds are good if you're expanding on technology or you're expanding on with business. Where I believe that if somebody has to go, okay, first round, I can understand people can underestimate and they need another round because they're stuck. I understand that. Nobody's going to get it right the first time round, especially if you're creating a new product.
Yeah.
But I believe if you're on round three, mm-hmm. and your round three is really just to continue the project because you're underestimated, I think the person who is running the business is the problem. Because if you don't know what you need, that you need three rounds, then you know what? You really don't know what you're doing and you're experimenting with investors' money. and reality. Because you look, like, prime example, we'll take any business. When you do, when you open up a the first business and you provide the service to the customer, it's possible that you didn't bring enough products to do the service on the first time because it's your first job. But when you go back and do it again the second time, how could you miss? You were there already, right? So you kind of know by the third time, if you made the same mistake, there's one common element. And that's usually what I believe that the person running the company should be removed. And that's my opinion. What, like for you, is there an acceptable number of rounds, or is it for you, or do you believe that it's just a learning process and number of rounds don't really matter? Like, what's your perspective?
So what I think is that when you're, if you are in VC-backed, you know, business, so you are planning your financial plan, you are planning your company, you know, that you will need another round, you know, to grow, to expand your business, you know, and you always will need to raise money, you know, for some growth until you will not decide that you can make a break even or go to IPO, things like that. And the important moment, you know, in the ideal world, when you are raising a new round, which is up round, it means that the valuation grew and, you know, and you're raising more money, more big valuation. In ideal world, you achieve a new, you know, achievements, you achieve a new goal. And for that, you are raising a new money. Okay. So that's an ideal world. However, in reality, for example, for what's happened in 21 and, you know, and all this stuff, many entrepreneurs said, like, look, we have a good business. We plan to sell for X, you know, for amount X. And based on this amount X, we're ready to raise another up round. However, we sell a little bit less because the market changed and we cannot raise the next up round because we actually... the situation changed. So in this position, many of those companies actually raised flat rounds or even a down rounds, but because they are committed to the company, because their investors are committed, I say, okay, so this is some, not your mistake. It's a situation with the market. And you continue, you know, with the company. However, and I agree with you, when it's about a new direction of the pivot of the product, something like that, and nothing works, and you know, and the round was purposed to, I don't know, to pivot the product to some direction and didn't work, and then another, well, that's for sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Someone so, should be accountable. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about is accountability. There is a certain point that the accountability has to come in. It can't just be bleeding money all the time.
No, that's for sure. But I don't think that is something that happens very often. I think that investors are not interested to, you know, to put more and more money if this is not interesting. I think the investors are looking if this company, this team, this product is actually something that is interesting and it's have some potential and it's have good enough and large enough potential, you know, to put more money from the VC perspective and all stuff. However, again, we are going to the bootstrap direction into direction of a profitable startup. Here the situation is a little bit different. So you asked me before if, you know, in bootstrap startup, you have some difficult moment. And I think my way to deal with, you know, with this struggling both in VC-backed and in bootstrap is just the analysis of reality. So you are going to some direction. Some things are working and some things are not. Now, if you are continue to do it, you know, repeatedly, you will get or the same result or even worse result. However, if you are analyzing what you are doing and you are experimenting with the things that are working better, eventually you should arrive to the way which is, you know, which brings you to the good result and to the product market fit and to sales and to increase of the ROI of the whole thing. That's my idea. That's what my opinion about it.
Absolutely. So now going with your new company, what is the direction you're going with your new company? What's this all about?
So we are like kind of the semi-stales, but I can tell you the name. So we call it endeavor.io, like with A. and endeavor.io. And we are dealing with with the very innovative topic, which is the organizational intelligence. We are coming, we have several products, and the common idea is that we are coming to various business units in organization and trying to figure out, I can write it to you if you are looking. I can write to you how it's this. Okay. So we are going to various business units and organizations and trying to figure out what is kind of the information pattern, which is very critical for them, but because of multiple reasons, it is not discovered well, it is not processed well, it is not secured well, not mitigated well, not forecasted well. And then we are providing end-to-end product, you know, to solve all this based on the same AI patent pending technologies that we developed. And that's the added value. Now we have a product for cyber, very successful, you know, have multiple paid customers. We have a product for compliance and we have a product for HR. All of them have doing different things, but they are all under this definition of organizational intelligence.
Right. At what stage are you in, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
by the looks of it, you're pretty much developed. So would you say you're on the beginning levels where people are starting to get to know you, or you think you're on the next level where it's sort of like you've gotten it established and people are aware, it's just a matter of just scaling it?
No, we are in the beginning level, not in very beginning, but still in the beginning. We exist, I think, 12 months, you know, officially even less, and we already have multiple paid customers. I think we still didn't have this very large brand awareness or something like that. However, what I really love to see is that we are touching pain points, which, you know, people are struggling to solve, and putting a lot of money, efforts, and hours to try to, you know, somehow to reduce. And when we are coming to propose what we can do, it's really like a relief for people, and that's the main point.
Yeah, absolutely, love that. Awesome. So where do you see it going? Like, what is your projection for the next 12 to 24 months?
That's a good question. Revenue wise, I think we should like make like a 3x or 5x more than the, you know, in our first period. And that's primarily because, you know, we have like much more mature state of the products. We really are able today to deal with a huge volume of information, you know, that the information data, we are ready, you know, to handle a very complex use cases that we spent all this time, you know, to build our technology based on it. So definitely, I really anticipate the big growth in the 24-25.
Amazing. Awesome. Now, for people who've watched this, right, and are inspired, and they have a business idea, and they want to start off, but they've been scared, what advice would you have for the aspiring entrepreneur?
That's an amazing question. I think, the advice that I'm giving to myself and to all my friends. Before you start a business, talk to your potential customers. Don't start the business because you have the idea. Talk at least with 30 potential customers that you don't know before. Ask them for their opinion. Ask them for their help. People want to help. If they understand that this is not a sales conversation, but the conversation of validation, you know, I'm pretty sure a very big amount of, you know, of good people, talented people, looks like your ICP can help you. And try to listen to what they say. Try to understand, you know, behind those politically correct things or the, you know, just the polite things that they're saying, if your idea is a must solution for them or nice to have solution for them. Don't lie to yourself. Understand if you have the real case or it's something that you will have the hard time after to sell. So that's, I think, is a very good, you know, very, very good way to start a business before starting a business, and also adapt to what they say. Maybe your initial idea was not so in direction. But if you change it a little bit, suddenly you see that it's something that is very much needed.
Love that. I love that. That's actually a great thing, right? Like testing the market before you go deep.
That's something that you know, it's funny, but you know, I unfortunately meet a lot of startups that are not doing it, and that's really a bad thing.
It's true. I'm not going to lie. I was guilty of that before.
Everyone, me too. Like in my very first, you know, in my very first business, same thing. So, but now, no. So we are, you know, like I said, for example, in Endeavor, we have three products. Each one of them we started after we saw like a very robust and significant validation from the market, like at least 10, 15 people that were excited and they are not faking it, you know, that were excited, that really showing us that this is a real problem. And only after we started to develop, to produce the code and to start to see how we can do it.
All right, so I'm going to have a couple more questions, and I'm going to go into what I call the lightning round, which is just a few personal fun questions.
Okay, please.
My second last question is, how do you know you've had a successful day?
That's a good question. I know if I have a successful day, because in the beginning of each day, I'm doing a plan for myself, what I should accomplish this day, which tasks should I accomplish. Now, part of those tasks are tasks that I don't know their results. It's mostly about, you know, like advancing in some sales process, you know, that company is selling something to some sell transaction to someone or some partnership or additional things that is not on my, you know, I'm not doing it. It's like something that can go or not go. It's not, it's still not fine. So if I'm succeeding in all my tasks, which I rarely have, finalized by deals and, you know, and revenues and all the stuff. So if I'm advancing and everything is going well, so this is a successful day.
Love that. All right. Last but not least is anyone who watches this and wants to find you online, where will they go?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I'm there. You know, that's the best way. Also, I have a Twitter. I can put it here. Okay, this is my Twitter. So, you know, both of those things, you know, please, I'm open for contact.
Perfect. And I'll put it in the show notes so everybody who's watching will know where to click. That's awesome. Awesome. Let's get into what I call the lightning round, which is just three, four questions of fun questions. Stuff like, what is your favorite food and why?
Favorite food? Probably the Chinese food. I don't know why, you know, we have a lot of great Chinese restaurant here in Israel, in Haifa, in Tel Aviv. The Chinese food is probably something that I love very much.
Fantastic. Favorite travel spot? If you can go anywhere, where would it be?
I'm a huge fan of San Francisco, and I love to be in San Francisco. And I love, you know, to go to various places in San Francisco, so... San Francisco, or if it's in Europe, Barcelona.
Oh, those I like Barcelona too. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
So awesome. All right. Favorite podcast or book?
Wow. So, you know, this is something embarrassing for me. I'm not watching a lot of podcasts now, for sure. I will watch your podcast much more. But, usually I have several podcasts in Israel about, you know, entrepreneurs that I'm watching sometimes. Sometimes I'm watching Rogan, you know, not all the time, you know, but something. And about the books, you know, I think that definitely Napoleon Hill.
You know, yes, and can grow rich.
And like more, several more advanced books of him, Nabokov, and probably the Hemingway also.
All right, last but not least, if you were given unlimited amount of money, okay, but you only had 48 hours to spend it, what you spend, you get to keep. What you don't spend is taken away. What would you do?
So first of all, I think that in this stage of my life, I will probably you say if I'm not spending it, it will be given away. That's the reason.
Yeah. So, if you don't spend it, it's taken away. So you got to put it somewhere.
And I can donate it.
You can donate it. You can invest it. So, whatever you want.
So I will, you know, what I will do, I will probably donate the majority of this money to researchers of fighting the several unsolved diseases that we still have. You know, that's a sad part, but you know, we have the humanity who's flying to Mars and to Moon. But you know, diseases like pancreatic cancer or brain cancer is still unsolved. So you know, what I think that what I would do is to donate majority of this money to the most advanced resources in this domain.
Makes sense. Awesome. I want to say thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, John, for inviting me. And you actually gave me an amazing question that they are really, you know, very deep. And I think you understand this matter of entrepreneurship and the startup business very well. And you know that if we in this conversation, if we could help to some young people that are going this journey, I am satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about passing on the knowledge, right?
Yeah, exactly. Knowledge transfer.
Exactly. All right. Thank you very much. If you like what you saw and you want to see some more, subscribe to the link below. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of The John Papaloni Show.